fellow geek brethren, you have come to the right place for all of your gaming, gadgets, technology, anime, video games, comic books, and anything else you can think of. It is GeekSpeak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, live from Brooklyn, New York, Ian Levenstein. Everybody, my name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to GeekSpeak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. First time back in 2 weeks, my first vacation since doing this show, and I figured why not have some people on to enjoy the 40th episode of GeekSpeak with me. And then, of course, are the guys from Geek Nights over at FrontRowCrew.com, and that's Rim and Scott. What's going on, guys?
Yo, life's good. What can I say?
Hey, what's up?
That's the best thing you could say about it, so as long as life's good, we're all lucky. So, yeah, I figured I'd have you guys on to talk some anime, considering that, well, you guys are pretty into that, considering that you're all into the all geekdom thing like I am. And, well, mostly anime conventions is what we're going to be talking about on today's show. And, well, I figured I'd start things off with something a bit general, and I'll ask Rim first, I guess. How many anime conventions have you been to in your life? And
oh,
what was
God,
your favorite
like...
one?
At least 20. I've been going to cons for over 6 years, like okay. many every year. And no matter what, the best one every year has always been Otakon, hands
okay.
down.
Yeah, I got to get myself over to Otakon. Hopefully next year I should be able to make it there. But it's all about, you know, balancing the funds and balancing the conventions you go to. And this year hasn't exactly been too decent with that. But maybe next year when I actually have this steady job, I might actually be able to, you know, get places.
Yeah. Yeah, back in college, that was always a problem, but once you're out of college, you just go to every con.
There you go.
There's nothing holding you back if you have a job.
If you get the time off, or even if not, that's what sick days are for.
Yeah, well, it's usually a lot of cons now, if it's a weekend con, you know, you leave Friday after work, you come home Sunday night, you know, you don't need to take a day off, really.
Yeah.
Except for the major, major cons. Like, Otakon, you need to take off Thursday.
Oh yeah,
or else you're in big trouble.
And San Diego Comic Con when you go there, but that's comic conventions. That's an entirely different topic there. But Scott,
yeah.
Around how many have you been to? As many as Rim? Or
no, I haven't been to as many as Rim because a lot of times he would run off and go somewhere, and I was busy. But I still have been to quite a few, at least 10 or more cons, I think,
okay.
over the years.
And Otakon would be your favorite as well.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Well,
there's a PenguinCon 2.0 was also really good, but I haven't been back to that con, so we don't know what its current status is.
Yeah, Detroit's a long way away from
Detroit,
where we live
okay.
now.
Yeah, that's not an anime con anyway.
Oh, all right. That's an everything con.
It's a Linux sci-fi gaming con with some anime a little bit.
You know, that's what it seems like. It seems like these days, like, a lot of the conventions are throwing in anime as, like, sort of a bonus for going and trying to get some of the other, you know, anime fans to show up, even if it's not a straight anime convention.
Yeah, a lot of the sci-fi cons, back when I ran a big anime club in Rochester, they would always try to hire us as a club to send people to just run anime in a room all weekend so they could attract the anime crowd.
Yeah, and that's one of the largest anime clubs in the country, right?
In fact, it was the largest back when I was in charge of it, and I know it's only grown since then, but I can't say with certainty if it's still the largest.
Well, as the outgoing president of the anime club over at Brooklyn College, and the fact that we were lucky enough to have like 20, 25 people in a room at the same time, congratulations on getting all those people there at once, because it's a bitch actually getting your name out there and actually saying, like, we'd have some people come up to us and, you know, who had been in college for 3 years and suddenly say to us, wait a minute, there's an anime club? We had no
idea. Yeah, at RIT, which is where we went, is a major, major geek school. Like, there's more Counter-Strike and software and music piracy going on there than anything you've ever seen. And, you know, it was basically most of the fact that the club was so big had to do with simply the school had so many geeks at it.
I mean, the gaming club was just as big.
Yep. Yet still, even then, there would be seniors coming around going, this is an anime club?
Well,
an anime club with 200 people with, you know, flyers all around the school every week. They still didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's also the thing about, you know, a college. You know, it's always big enough where there's going to be at least 5-10 people who have never even heard of you. So, but there's a nice little war going on between, and this will always be the case, between, like, the sci-fi club and the anime club at my college. And it's like, why can't we just get along, you know? Make life easy that way.
We had a much more friendly rivalry where we'd play dodgeball against each other and stuff like
that's
awesome. But there was no actual conflict.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah, like, there was a whole thing going on a couple years back where the sci-fi club was trying to integrate itself into the anime club because we have more members than them. So right away they were just like, yeah, we could join up with you guys. And we're like, we don't want to watch Star Wars all the time. So that's how we weaseled out of that. But anyway, what is it about Otakon that makes you like it so much? I mean, is it one specific thing that they do, or is it just the general atmosphere?
Most of it is just the general atmosphere. If you go in and there are 20,000 geeks doing crazy stuff everywhere. I mean, you know, when you're at home during a normal week, you know, you go on YouTube and you see a couple of videos of fun stuff. Imagine if there was fun stuff like you see on YouTube going on everywhere you look all day long.
Oh, man.
It's like a geek mecca. I mean, it didn't seem so big to us when we were in college, and we were also living in a place like that where every day we played German board games and video games and watch anime, and there were geeks. But then now we're in the real working world, and there aren't so many. But then we go to Otakon, and there's all these geeks, and everyone just wants to have a good time.
Yeah, and that's pretty much exactly the way that I feel about going to anime conventions. Because, again, I mean, Brooklyn College has its fair share of geeks, but not nearly as many people, you know, all in the same place at the same time as when you go to an anime convention or when you go to a comic convention or stuff like that. But what I love about the anime conventions is that everybody's just so, you know, approachable and friendly, you know, most of the time at least. I mean, every now and then you'll find one dude who's, you know, off in the corner working, you know, with his MySpace face going. But other than that, I mean, most people are pretty friendly when you go in there and you just strike up a conversation about some random anime and just, you know, from there hit it off.
Yeah, definitely the exact opposite of the sci-fi and not all, but some of the comic cons I've been to over the years.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? Going to New York Comic Con, I might have really enjoyed my time at New York Comic Con, but I also, let's see, considering I was, like, trying to get interviews with everybody in that one, and that was my thing, I talked to maybe, like, 3 people the entire convention that weren't people I was trying to get interviews with. So I could sort of see the difference in the atmosphere there with that. Now, you guys have run panels in the past, right?
Yep, I've been running panels every year at Otakon for the last, well, now 5 years. And, I mean, OhioCon, KatsuCon, ToraCon, Amazement, God, what other cons? Unicon, Astronomicon.
Yeah.
Lots of cons. So, lots of cons, lots of panels. What sort of panels do you guys usually do?
Well, actually, Scott here hasn't, until just this year, he's never actually been on panels with me, because this was something that originally had nothing to do with Geek Nights. I mean, I ran this huge, huge anime club, and we went to OhioCon, our first anime convention ever, and there was an anime club summit, where we didn't know what it was, something about, you know, anime clubs get together. We show up, and the people who were supposed to run it weren't there. So we looked at each other, myself and a couple other people who ran the club, and we walked up to the front, pretended we were the people who were supposed to run it, and ran the panel.
Oh, my God.
And it went really, really well. Then, fast forward to Otakon, our second anime con.
Otakon 2002?
Yeah, something like that, 2001, 2002.
Well, let's see, this is our fifth Otakon this year that we haven't gone to yet, so 2002.
Yep, and the same thing happened. So once again, we walked up to the front. We ran an awesome panel just about, you know, how to run anime clubs. We're kind of experts at it. And then the Otakon staff came up and said, "You guys are badass. Come back every year."
Oh my God, I'm totally trying that one of these days. You know, if I'm waiting around for one of the panels to get started, like we were waiting for Anime Parliament to get started at Anime Next this year for like, oh man, it must have been like 20-30 minutes because they double booked the guys. They were emceeing the main events panel at the exact same time they were supposed to be doing Anime Parliament, which wasn't exactly too good, but
it's a great job of scheduling.
Yeah, exactly. Especially considering that I'm pretty sure that the guys that were running it were actually the heads of programming. So, yeah, that's kind of a bit shady right there. But when I finally did get started, it was fun. But, like, I'm turning to my friends, and I'm like, should we just go up there and say we're them?
The answer is always yes. I mean, Scott and the other Scott who's not here, and I and the whole front row crew have kind of insinuated ourselves in the industry over the years just by always being that guy. Whenever there's a void in the continuum of anything that's going on, we step in and do whatever we can do, and it's worked really well.
Well, now you know how I started doing panels, because that's basically what I did. I filled the void of a dude who went off to Japan, and from there my friend was just like, you talk a lot. You want to be on a panel? Okay.
Yeah.
And from there, you know, I did freaking four at Anime Next. I have no idea how the hell we managed to get four. Oh, yeah, because we know people. But other than that, like, we did those panels. And, I mean, I listened to your show, and basically I understood where you guys were coming from with that, because we did the panels because we could.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I was in a little different situation, just because the topic we were talking about is something that me and, again, the other Scott, there's two Scots we know,
yeah,
are actually kind of recognized as experts when it comes to anime clubs. I mean, we were even featured in Newtype.
Oh, really?
A while ago.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, our friend Scott Johnson was called the legendary Scott Johnson.
Oh, that's
awesome. The direct quote.
Oh, my God. Yeah. and here I am just randomly knowing somebody who, you know, knows a couple of people at anime conventions who happens to work for Pokemon, and I'm just like, okay, I'll go in the back door, whatever, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the best way. That's how I became staff at, like, Animazement. And most places I go, it's just because I knew someone at first, and that's how you get in the door.
Yeah.
And then when people realize, hey, these guys are awesome, then that's where you just take off.
Well, let's talk a bit about the Anime Next experience, since that was the most recent one that you guys went to, and that's where I managed to actually finally meet you guys, which was kind of cool. What was Anime Next like in comparison to some of the other conventions that you guys have been to?
Well, first of all, the fact that it was in, like, three separate places with a lot of outside action was quite different from what we're used to.
Though, surprisingly, I thought it worked really well. The weather could have ruined that con.
Oh, yeah.
I actually really liked having all that space.
You know what? Yeah. Honestly, had it been Anime Boston, it would have been entirely ruined, because this year at Boston, it rained the entire time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, the weather definitely helped it out. You know, I kind of liked how all the, you know, instead of, you know, a crammed hallway that was slow to walk down, or, you know, a crowded lobby or ballroom, there was just people spread out outside. It wasn't congested. The only place, you know, that really saved, you know, the fanboy funk was reserved for, like, the gaming rooms and nowhere else. It was pretty good. Another thing about it was that this con seemed to have, like, a lot less, you know, physical, I don't know, maybe it just didn't actually have less, but it felt like there was less physical indoor space.
Okay.
That they were really just, you know, stretching out all over the place, a lot less events, and a lot more just hanging out everywhere.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I like about the Anime Next atmosphere, sort of how,
yep,
you know, I mean, basically, you just, like I said before, you literally just go up to anybody and just strike up a conversation, but at the same time, that's sort of how, like, the panels were run also. Like, I know that, I mean, the ones that I did, we did the Adult Swim panel, and there were about, let's see, because they scheduled us up against hentai dubbing and the rave. So there was nobody at our panel whatsoever. Last year we had like a full crowd because nothing else happened to be happening at the same time. But this year there must have been 12 people in the room, and we just BS'd the entire time, like got to know the people in the crowd and just, you know, relaxed. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that is something I noticed about the Anime Next schedule, is that all the things, at least the things we were interested in doing, were mostly happening at night. We went there Saturday only.
Yeah.
And pretty much all morning, most of the stuff was either stuff we weren't interested in or stuff that didn't happen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, if we'd went with our whole crew, we would have probably had a lot more fun. It's just that this is one of the first cons we've gone to where, one, we weren't staff, we weren't panelists, we weren't anything special, we were just dudes. And we didn't bring our whole crew, it was just three of us.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, and I didn't know anyone there besides, you know, like you.
Hi.
And I only barely knew you, you know, through the internet, vaguely.
Yeah, well, we knew some of the guests, but we really had no chance to go bother them.
No, not really.
So,
you know, and a lot of the things we might have gone to see, like, it was the concert on Friday, you know? And so we were only there Saturday. We missed out on some things.
Well, I love how also, like, some people can be, like, celebrities to some people and not to others. Like, at the Adult Swim panel, two of the people in the crowd were Scott Meltzer and one of the guys who helped him out with This Is Otakudom and Steam and all that. And because I had him on, basically, I just said, guys, go to my panel. And they're like, okay, fine. And they sat there for a little bit. And I'm like, wow, these guys are actually at my panel. Everybody else is probably just like, who the hell are those two dudes in the corner?
Yeah, part of that, though, is a lot of people like that, anime inside industry people, you know, you don't know by looking at them.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I know I know the name Kristen Freeman, but I couldn't pick him out of a crowd for you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, if he was there and you pointed him out to me, I'd be like, oh, whoa, there he is. But if I just saw him walking down the street, I probably wouldn't even say hi to the guy.
And thank you for mentioning Crispin Freeman, as he's one of my favorite voice actors, so there you go.
Yeah.
He's pretty badass.
I just picked the first American industry anime name that came to mind.
Yeah, I would have said, like, Caitlin Glass or David Lucas.
David Lucas is my favorite English anime voice actor.
Well, you can't say David Lucas without saying his, 12 other names. So
yeah, I know, right?
I don't even remember the rest of them.
David Lucas, I think, is the coolest of those names, so I like to go with that one.
Come on, anybody who voices Onizuka, Spike, and Mugen at this, right away.
Hey, he also was the voice of Papa in Initial D.
Yes. Not much.
Probably his worst role.
Oh man, and I was actually a bit upset. I played the Samurai Champloo game, and he wasn't able to voice himself as Mugen in that. And it was one of the main reasons why I actually really didn't like the game too much.
What? That's crap.
What kind of game is it? I never played it.
It's a typical hack and slash. That's probably the best way to put it. I mean, they do put some of their own features into it that are kind of cool. Put it this way, it's one of the better anime games, but again, that doesn't say much.
No, it doesn't.
Because there aren't many good ones. Well, let's go back actually on the track of the convention yet again. Now, with the panel atmosphere, there weren't too many industry panels at Anime Next. And, I mean, the ones that were there, for instance, when I saw that there was going to be a Square Enix panel, I thought, wow, there's going to be a Square Enix panel. It might actually be industry guys, and it was run by fans, which was a bit of a shock there, because when you call something Square Enix, right away you're expecting to find, we have such and such from the Final Fantasy series, we have such and such from, Kingdom Hearts, and blah, 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 blah. But it was run by four or five, well run by the guys who were running it, but none of the industry guys that I would normally expect. And that was something that I found interesting about Anime Next.
Yeah, I think that's just, there seems to be a convention of when you have an industry panel, say the ADV panel, you call it ADV panel.
Yeah.
You had a panel about the Wii, but you didn't call it the Nintendo panel.
Exactly.
You called it, you have the different name for it, so people know it's not an industry panel.
We wanted to name it We Suck, but they wouldn't let us.
I would have had it would have been so much more awesome if you had actually had that name.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Though, honestly, I really don't generally like the industry panels in that, mostly now that I've met a lot of these people, and actually the industry has tried to horn in on some panels I've done in the past and try to have a guy there, a stooge, to talk.
Okay.
And it's just that they don't say anything that isn't already on the internet. They'll never make, a surprise announcement or anything special.
Yeah, at the big cons, they'll announce their new licenses, but you can find those out on Anime News Network the next day or Anime on DVD the next day.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
and they'll never answer, controversial questions. If you yell about a bad dub or something, they'll just kind of brush you off.
Or if you ask them what they're working on right now or what's coming down the line, they'll never tell you.
Well, it's like going to a DC panel at a comic convention, and you ask, is Flash alive? And they say, yes or no. and then you just move on from there. We were considering actually trying to get somebody for our Adult Swim panel. We were thinking, if Jackson Publick was available, see if we can get him or something like that. But eventually we realized that it was, we have this atmosphere already, and, to put the industry guys on there, unless we were able to get somebody McGurk. I mean, that would have totally kicked ass, but,
yeah.
H. John Benjamin, holy fucking shit, is that man the guy. Mm-hmm. he's the guy that I'd love to actually, have on a panel someday. But other than that, we're just we're not pretending to be an industry panel, but there are some people that should really think about maybe changing the name of their panels a bit so that people don't walk in there and think, wow, this is the Gundam panel, and it's run by some fat guy in a t-shirt.
Now, unless the fat guy in a t-shirt, instead of a t-shirt, he puts on a suit and he acts like he's a real dude and just makes stuff up.
Now, see, that would be awesome.
Yeah. I think in general, it's cool to have industry people on your panel because they're knowledgeable and usually interesting. You just don't want people on the panel who are, doing their job as being on the panel. They're representing the company on the panel, because then they're just basically shills and they're not doing the interesting things that they do as a person.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's, again, also, you got to look for personality and not just, information, because, like you said, that's what the internet's for.
Mm-hmm.
Go on the Anime News Network and find out all this shit, and you can do it. And by the way, this is going to be a lot of cursing in this episode, because I'm, for some reason, I'm more laid back than I usually am. Quite possibly because I'm talking to you guys right now, but...
Yeah, we really don't care much for the FCC.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a podcast, so I'll put a little explicit in the title or something like that for people who don't want their 9-year-olds to listen to it. But
we've actually only marked one episode explicit ever, and it was quite explicit.
Extremely explicit.
Okay, see, now you need to let me know what episode this is, because I need to listen to it right away.
I don't know if you want to tell you right now.
Yeah, Well, you can always edit out. It's an episode on masturbation, which is one of our most popular episodes ever.
Yes. That one I saw in the queue, but I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Do I dare?
And I can tell you right now that we have a bunch of our female friends working on a sequel to that.
Oh, boy.
And I don't think I need to say any more about what that might be.
Yeah, I don't think you really do. That's for off mic for a later time. But anyway.
Yep.
Now,
I'd say about... No, I just got one more little anecdote. Is that the first Otakon I went to, I sort of had a... You know, I made a mistake and had a learning experience simultaneously is... The guy who wrote Trigun was there, and back in those days, I was a big fan of Trigun, and I still, you know, I'm still a fan of Trigun.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had never really been to that many cons. It was, what, my second or third con ever.
Something like that.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'd never really gone to a lot. I didn't even know industry panel, not industry panel. I was still basically, you know, a con virgin at the point.
Noob.
Yeah, total noob. So, you know, I went to the panel where the Trigun guy was, and then I waited in line to get his autograph, and then I haven't done that again since.
Really?
You know, well, yeah, I mean, sure, it was cool to meet that guy, but he didn't really speak English so well.
Yeah.
And you could, you know, I couldn't really ask him any questions. You know, when I got him to sign my book, it was basically like, hi,
yeah,
thanks.
Well, that's sort of like when I heard that Kota Hirano was going to be at Otakon. I'm like, well, I really need to go to that. But then I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, I just want to watch the Helsing OVA. You know, I mean, like, he's not going to be telling me too much that I don't already know about Helsing. And also, I don't know how well he speaks English. I doubt he speaks English very well. So it would basically just be like, you're Kota Hirano, can I shake your hand? Very much, thank you very much. Here's a autograph that will only mean something to me, you know.
I think what it comes down to is the ultra, ultra big guests will only appear at the ultra, ultra big cons.
Yeah.
But you can't really, unless you're high-level staff or a VIP, you're not going to get access to them.
Oh, yeah.
That's very meaningful unless all you really want is an autograph, which I really am not too interested in autographs that much. You know, I go to a Comic-Con and people say, aren't you going to let me sign the thing that you just bought from me that I made? And I go, oh, I don't really care either way. Sure, sign it if you want.
That's how I was at Mocha, actually. Like, a lot of the guys were like, you want me to sign it? I'm like, okay, if you want.
Yeah, and then, you know, but if you go to a smaller con, you won't get as big guests because they just won't go to a con of that size.
Yeah.
But the guests that are there, you might have better access to, depending on, you know, just how big the con is and your personal level of coolness.
Well, let's...
Yeah, the obvious answer is to make yourself a guest yourself or staff.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, see, that one of these days I am going to have to be staff because, like, this is my, what was it now? Yeah, that was my... sixth anime convention that I just went to. And I realized that pretty much everybody that I know has been staff at least once, and I just got to experience that, you know? I mean, to see whether it's for me or not.
It really depends on the convention. I mean, like, Otakon, I would say that a lot of the staff are the equivalent of what, like, a gopher would be at a smaller con.
Okay.
And...
Yeah, maybe, Otakon is a 500-plus staff.
500-plus staff.
It's crazy.
Oh,
and
wow.
Most cons get to the point where there's staff, and then there's staff.
Yeah.
And if you want to be a staffer, they make you be a gopher, and then they make you be like a low-level staff guy, and over the years and years, you work out the ranks.
Unless you know somebody, and then right away, you know, they're like, hey.
Yeah, or you just impress someone. Like, when I went to Animazement, I'd never met any of these people. I'd never even been to the Carolinas.
Yeah.
And I show up, and within about 4 or 5 hours of me being there, volunteering to do some security and having my panel, they made me the head of crowd control.
Holy crap.
And I'm now staff.
Wow. Okay, that's amazing right there, man. To just, like, sort of be like, hey, you want this? Okay, cool.
Honestly, it was mostly that I had experience, mostly from watching what Otakon staff did and how they dealt with crowds.
Okay.
And dealing with my own crowds from the anime club. So
and
when
being
I had,
in crowds.
Yes, and being in crowds and being yelled at by people in the past.
But yeah.
You ever have anybody come up to you and, you know, from another anime convention and sort of be like, hey, we want you?
The closest to that we've come to so far is actually Torakon, which is a con started at RIT,
okay,
has invited us back every year to be guests.
That's cool.
And Katsucon, the people who run the video game room, invited us back next year. They didn't even know we were there this year, and they were kind of mad that we didn't warn them because they wanted to meet us. We didn't even know until later that half the staff listened to our podcast.
That is really awesome.
But they invited us back to be guests, to sit in the video game room and interview people and kind of be masters of the ceremonies and yelling and talking the whole time.
That's cool. Yeah, well...
So we haven't planned that out at all.
Well, that's like the co-runner of the panels that I did, my friend. Basically, I'm pretty sure it was one of her friends, but I'm not entirely sure. Like, basically went up to her after Anime Next and said, we want you to do panels at Anime USA. And Anime USA is in Virginia. So I'm like, okay, I believe it's... Thanksgiving weekend also, or like close to Thanksgiving weekend. So I'm thinking to myself, do I really want to take a flight out to Virginia around Thanksgiving to do panels at a convention that I've never been to before?
Yeah, because honestly, very few cons will accommodate you more than letting you in free. I mean, the most I've ever gotten, and I've been doing this for so long, is I've gotten cons to pay for my hotel and my badge, and that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, this really goes back to the rule of con quality versus distance. You know, I will go to the crappiest con in the universe. It is 5 minutes from my house.
Oh, yeah.
But if a con is like 1 hour away, then it has to be an okay con to get me to go. If the con is 3 hours away, it better be damn good.
Well, we used to drive, like 7 hours to get to Otakon?
Yeah, but Otakon, if we lived in California, we would go to Otakon.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, I went to Anime Next for the first time because, well, I live in Brooklyn, and that's like a mile outside of Manhattan. So I was just like, it's there. Come on, please. Anybody want to go?
Yep. We decided to go at the last minute for kind of the same reason.
Yeah. Well, also, I love the fact that my room situation was originally supposed to be that we were supposed to have five people in one room and four in the other, and the two people that were supposed to be in the room with me decided at the last second that their job was more important than anime convention. I kid, but they weren't able to make it, and there was just three of us in this gigantic suite at the AmeriSuites with, like, a microwave and two sinks and a refrigerator, and we're just spreading out and saying, like, this is the one time we're ever going to have this much room at an anime convention. Enjoy it.
Yeah, we've gotten to the point, our whole crew, like, we bring an entourage to conventions. So, like, at Otakon this year, we have three rooms in the fancy Renaissance Hotel, all adjacent. And
adjoining.
Yeah. But back in the day, like, when I used to go to Anime Central, we used to every year get the presidential suite and throw, like, the biggest, most raucous party you can imagine.
Oh, man.
And then we'd have, like, 20 people stay in the room with us.
So I'm assuming that's the most that you've ever had in one room at the same time, or...?
Pretty much.
Yeah. We tend to, we plan out our hotels very well, and we're very strict. If someone says they're going to be in our room for Otakon and they say yes, they owe us money whether they show up or not.
That's exactly how my that's exactly how my anime club does it, because we get rooms as the anime club. If somebody says they're going, we get it most of the time, I get the room, and immediately afterwards, they're giving me the money, and if they don't give me the money, I have their phone number, I know where they live, I'm going to their freaking door if I have to. give us some of the negatives, and I know that we really don't want to go too far into the negatives here, but give us some of the negatives that you found at anime conventions, and I know that Fanboy Funk is obviously going to be one of them, but maybe some improvements that, we'll say for Anime Next first, and then maybe cons in general afterwards, some improvements that Anime Next might be able to do in, say, the next year or so.
Let's see, Anime Next, one improvement is, you know, while the, you know, everyone walks around and hangs out is nice, you know, the separate buildings thing is still sort of a bother. And, you know, their physical geographical location is good, you know, right there in northern New Jersey,
sure,
at the Meadowlands.
Yeah.
But, you know, the building isn't exactly perfect. I mean, they have the main events, the dealer's room, and the artist alley all in the same physical room with, you know, temporary borders set up. That's not really ideal. You know, you'd be walking around in one place hearing noises from the other place.
Oh,
it wasn't
yeah.
always... You know, it was slightly annoying.
Well,
not too bad.
It was even worse last year, let's put it that way, because you realize, well, I'll explain to the listeners, there are walls that they set up, sort of like if you've ever been in a college, so a lot of the rooms that you're in, you know, for a class, something like that, might have, you know, temporary walls that could be taken down. Those were those sort of, like, sliding wall situations. And last year, they had the doors for them on the opposite sides of where they were this time. So they were actually in the same area as the main events and all that. So every time a door was open, you'd suddenly hear this giant blast of sound, and then it would be closed. And then somebody would open it, and then it would be closed. And it was just so distracting at a panel in general, especially when you were trying to watch something at a panel. It was just, oh, dear God, it was terrible.
Yeah, especially since, you know, even if you could find the other buildings where whatever panel or room was located, it was sometimes hard to exactly find that room, you know.
Yeah.
With the video games, you know, I didn't realize right away I had to go upstairs.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't realize what end of the hallway, you know, which showing room or which where the game room was, and
there were drastic changes from last year too in the basically where the game room was and where the viewing rooms were, because I went up there, like, you know, from knowing the layout from last year, expecting that it was going to be somewhat similar, and didn't realize at first that the gaming room was even on the second floor of the Holiday Inn, because last year it was inside the inside the embassy. And this year it wasn't. And I'm going there, like, looking for the hentai screenings, and I see DDR. And I'm like, am I in the right place?
Actually, I was very impressed with how they handled DDR. The fact that they put it in a separate room, and they had the AC all the way up in that room.
Yes.
That was actually, I must say, the best DDR room of any con I've been to. Probably.
Yeah, I don't know. OhioCon had a whole bunch of DDR machines, but it smelled.
Well, they didn't have machines; they had the mats.
No, it wasn't OhioCon. It was Anime Central. They had DDR machines and para machines.
Well, oh, that's all right. Yeah, well, they had a DDR machine at Anime Next, but it was just one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I think last year actually they had two, but it was in a very cramped room, and you did not want to go in there past say like 3 p.m. during the day, because if you did, you'd die. The stench was just overwhelming. It was just absolutely awful. And that's one thing. If you're going to have a gaming room, if you're going to have a video game room, if you're going to have a DDR room, ventilate the shit out of the thing, or else you're going to screw yourselves.
Yep. I mean, God, we used to run, like, anime-themed dance parties and raves at RIT, and you should see the lengths we went to fumigate and air out that room during the course of the event.
Oh, my God. You must have had, like, air fresheners all over the place, like, randomly spraying.
Well, we would get one of those giant industrial fans and point it at the door and then open the door. And
we also appointed people to be smell deputies who had the full authority to just kick people out if they smelled bad. And we've kicked people out. We've kicked a lot of people out.
Well, I know how you feel. Let's put it that way. I've thrown parties over at my college where there's been at least one guy that reeks to high heaven that we've literally just had to say, there's a Dwayne Reed down the street. If you could possibly make us happy by going and getting yourself a ban and just rubbing it, that'd be nice.
See, things like that are dangerous. We actually, I'm not going to tell the story, but we ended up with a couple hundred pounds of soap samples.
Yeah.
And we decided to give them away to, like, as a, if someone smelled bad, we'd hand it to them as a subtle, all right, dude, we're not going to say anything. No one noticed I handed this to you, but it should be obvious what to do. And a dude opened it and started rubbing it on his underarms while thanking us for it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we just stood there dumbfounded. We didn't know what to say.
Dear God. Well, isn't there an anime convention out there that actually gives you deodorants inside of the, you know, like comp bag?
I think there was once a convention, I forget which one it was, where one of the deodorant companies was a sponsor and put samples of deodorant in all the con bags.
It might have been NekoCon, but don't quote me on that because I don't remember. And no con I've been to has done that.
No.
I think it might have been Expo, actually, if I'm remembering Maybe. Correctly. Because I remember hearing it had an anime in the name, and I don't think it was USA, so I'm assuming it was probably Expo.
It could be.
Yeah.
The best con giveaway ever was at UberCon, where they gave away the milk.
Oh, yeah.
That was the best.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, at the con registration desk in the front of the hotel, there was these, you know, cooler, you know, it's basically buckets full of ice with these, you know, milk bottles. You know, they're like a strawberry milk and a vanilla milk. And you could drink as much as you want. And the company that made the milk sponsored the con and just gave them like crates and crates and crates of the stuff.
Well, so then there was PenguinCon, which gave free beer to every member of the
con. Yeah, but that wasn't a sponsorship.
That was just them buying
beer. Was just kegs that they had.
Well, see, I need at least one that's sponsored by either Pepsi, Balls, or Red Bull, because that would make everybody's life easier.
UberCon did that last year, actually. I don't remember which energy drink it was, but everyone was entitled to one free energy drink that they could claim at any time during the weekend.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. What other suggestions would you give for next, other than obviously don't smell and maybe put the panels and stuff in better order and stuff along those lines? Anything else, sir?
See, it's very difficult because a con like that, I have no generic advice, but I have a lot of extremely specific advice, as in, here is me writing a 2-page paper on the logistics of this event and the minor modifications I would make.
Yep.
Okay.
The con in general was great.
Yeah, I can say, though, the video game room, not the DDR room, but the video game room was a little sparse.
Yeah.
If it was bigger and had more variety, you know, that would have been a little better.
I would try to shy away, this is my personal opinion, shy away from the typical tournaments they run at cons, you know, the Halo tournament, the Smash Brothers tournament, and have larger fun events where the championship rounds are actually an event, like in main events or something, like a super trash talk Mario Tennis, where you have a panel of judges that grade the trash talk, and you score points by playing Mario Tennis well.
That's totally awesome. Wow.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Like that.
Sign me up, man. Seriously.
And, you know, the gaming room, like the non-video gaming, you know, they had some cool people in there, but it really didn't have the quantity. And, you know, there was a couple events in there that we wanted to do that just didn't get run.
Yeah.
Like, we wanted to play Paranoia, right?
Yep.
And they wanted to play Paranoia also, but they just didn't have room. They didn't, you know, schedule and plan those events out well enough to guarantee, okay, this table is reserved, this guy is running it, here's a sign-up sheet.
And they just, there were staff there who just didn't seem to have the, I don't know, cojones or the whatever to actually tell people, all right, you need to leave now so we can run this event.
Yeah.
They would just kind of let things ferment. I don't think ferment was the right word. I don't want anything to ferment.
No, when we went to the gaming room early on Saturday, there was like the worst funk in the universe.
Okay.
But then when we came back later in the day to see if the Paranoia game was running, they had taken care of the situation. So they knew what was up, at least as far as the funk goes. But
well, that's good to hear. That's
yeah,
good.
As far as the actual non-video gaming goes, they were slightly disorganized.
Well, and there was a nice ratio of people who you could actually talk to as opposed to the quote-unquote fanboy.
Yes, we ran into a large posse of variously cool kids we played a bunch of DS games with.
Yeah, like actually, there was only one event I had to completely walk out of because of a fanboy, and that actually was, I mean, not that I wasn't enjoying the event itself, it's called Bad Anime Bad.
We were going to go to that.
Yeah.
But then we went home instead.
Okay, well, you know what? Bad Anime Bad is a lot of fun because they show absolutely god-awful anime. Like, half the time, it's, like, random stuff that was made in Korea that bites off everything else. And, of course, the best thing that they ever showed, I believe this was at Boston last year, they showed the first ever Gundam dub, which was done with the Canadian voice actors. And I quote, "That's one powerful Gundam you got there."
Yep.
Oh, man. And, of course, my favorite scream. Stops like right in the middle for no reason whatsoever. Starts all over again. That's just pure brilliance right there. And then there was the one with the animals with the hanging balls.
Oh, Pompoko.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it was.
The one with the tanukis.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a great anime. Actually, everyone should. I'm being serious. It's like a fantastic movie.
Right. Yeah.
Regardless of the balls.
I mean, it's a cultural thing that's part of the mythology around the tanuki.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll take your word for it on that, but. At this year's Bad Anime Bad, there was one guy who was sitting down, and he was larger than the seat he was sitting in. That's number one. But then from there, whenever the guy who was running the panel said anything, he immediately needed it explained to him in explicit detail, and he wanted to know things like who made the anime, who's voicing that, and things that nobody else gave a shit about.
Like that are very easily solved, because I've run into things like that a lot in panels I've been on, where there's someone troublesome in the audience, and really, whoever's running the panel, or a staffer, just has to either be cool or smart, or good at speaking extemporaneously enough to gloss over it and handle it, or kick the dude out.
Okay.
And I just don't think enough people are willing to do that sort of thing.
The guy was too nice, really, I think.
You can also ignore the guy, you know, if you don't give him the microphone, he can't ask any questions.
True, but this was in a very, very small room, and everything he said could be heard by everybody.
Yeah, so it's up to the guy running the panel to be witty enough to kind of give the guy a hint and put him down.
Yeah.
You know, like, all right, you need to shut up.
I mean, actually, there are a lot of, because I studied, as a side to all the computer stuff I do, professional technical communications at university. And there are a lot of techniques and ways that even professionals use to deal with troublesome audience members like that. And I guess I can't really expect that level of professionalism from people who are just doing this on a volunteer effort for fun,
sure.
But it's a pipe dream of mine that I'd like to see that.
Well, you know, it just came to the point where I turned to my friends and I'm like, you want to get out of here? Yeah, and then we just went over to Mystery Hentai Theater 3000 and just sat down.
You totally should have just stood up and said, dude, you were a fanboy and I'm leaving because of you.
Yeah, if I was in an audience and there is a schmucky guy like that,
yeah.
And the guy in charge of the panel isn't doing anything about it, and he's obviously being tortured by by it too, I would get up and say something and then leave to make them both feel bad.
God, Scott was legendary at RIT for the fact that, I mean, I ran the club. I had to be very diplomatic to everyone, mm-hmm. and I was very good at the smile, nod, laugh, pretend I had business, and walk away.
Yeah.
But Scott would be like the time bomb. And whenever someone was a fanboy, we'd turn Scott's timer. And when it dinged, he'd walk over and tell the guy he was a horrible fanboy. And none of us had to do anything. And the fanboy would leave.
See, I have the sudden stop and firm glare down to a T, basically. So if I'm having a conversation with somebody, and there's this one guy in my club who shall remain nameless, because anybody who's listening who does know me and does know the anime club will know exactly who I'm talking about when I'm talking about this, but nobody else will.
I think every club has that guy.
Well, yeah, we had many of that guy, and as one left, another one came in. We even had Case Western warn us about that guy because they were sending their fanboy to us.
Oh, God. And that's exactly how this guy came into our club. I'm saying that there were these two guys that I knew from high school who basically warned us ahead of time, like, do not let this guy into the club. And the guy who was running the club at the time let him
it's
in.
It's the same story, everyone.
Exactly.
I hope it's not the same dude.
No. This
was his name Steve?
No. No.
Because
we had a problem where most of the guys who were bad were named Steve.
Okay.
Like, three of
them.
I'm
going to tell a story right now. You guys have watched Fruits Basket, right?
I watched the first episode when it came out, and I know about it. It's with the Zodiac and the animals and the girl.
Well, the last episode, this isn't giving anything away, but there's a very tense moment in the episode where there's absolute silence. Nobody's doing anything. This is back when we had a basement room with a giant projector and all that, so we're all sitting there, and it's absolute quiet. Absolute quiet. All of a sudden, the guy goes, why is nobody talking?
That's like the guy where he finished Ava, and then what did he say?
I forget what he said, but he just said something stupid. You know, everyone was sitting in awe of Ava, because it was all these people who had never seen it before.
Yeah.
And it ended with the clapping.
After a 26-episode-plus movie marathon that was the whole weekend long.
Nice.
And the guy just said something stupid, and it ruined it.
I kicked the guy out once for one session, and after that, he basically realized, don't cross me. So hopefully the girl who's taking over for me at the anime club will actually realize that she needs to do the exact same thing with this guy, because whenever I'm having a conversation with anybody, if he says a word, I turn around and I'm like I'm in the middle of something, and that's it. And he'll just, okay, fine, and just go off into the corner. So all's well with the world.
Yep, it's always also good to have intimidating friends for when these kind of things arise, because sometimes people are, you know, actually stubborn pricks, and just saying, would you please leave, doesn't work.
That's what my buddy Mike is for. Mike, if you're listening, hi.
Yeah, we got Katsu.
We have Katsu, the kendo master.
Yeah, you met Katsu. He was there with us. That guy fended. I mean, he is good at kendo. He is real good at kendo. He fended off all of us simultaneously once.
Oh, man.
Like, none of us could touch
him.
That
is awesome.
He's cool.
Yeah. He sounds cool just from meeting him. He sounded pretty cool, and now I think he's even cooler now after that. But you guys ever been to any of the hentai at the anime conventions?
We don't like hentai.
5 minutes of La Blue Girl once,
okay.
And I watched Elven Bride because I thought it was funny, and that's the only hentai I've ever experienced.
Okay.
I've accidentally seen hentai on the internet.
Okay, because if there's one thing that I've realized is that when everybody is gathered in a room together watching hentai, you need to do one of two things. You either need to make fun of it the entire time, or you have to leave. Because
I've had two experiences. Because I've always wanted to go to the Buster's hentai dubbing thing.
Yeah.
Everyone in the world has told me it's hilarious.
Well, that's why we make our own out of it, basically. Like, this year, it wasn't officially called Mystery Hentai Theater 3000, but a friend of mine was actually running the hentai screenings, and a friend of mine actually picked out some of them specifically because we knew we would be sitting down there making fun of it the entire time, and we had our crow and our robot thing going on at the exact same time.
Yeah, there is actually one hentai that Anime World Order talked about in their podcast called Another Lady Innocent.
Something Lady Innocent,
and apparently it took the guy 6 years to animate like a half hour of it. And it's on one DVD, I think, for $30.
Yeah, it costs more than a dollar a minute to see this
thing.
Yeah, but I want to see it just because of the animation quality. And, you know, just what I want to see what any, you know, it doesn't matter if it's hentai or not. I want to see what it looks like when someone spends 6 years to make 30 minutes of animation.
I mean, apparently it's animated like crazily. Like, the guy hand drew almost every cell. And every frame looks exactly like a promotional cell.
Like, if you open up the middle of a new type and you see that, you know, amazing. Amazingly printed centerfold there. you know, if every frame of the whole animation is like that.
Oh my god, and it's a hentai, which right away thinks to myself, like, wow, this guy took so much time to make a hentai like that.
Yeah. And it's only the first episode, there's more in the, you know, coming
and,
in the OAV.
And by the way, if you want a funny hentai that's just funny in the sake that it's, it, basically the main character is a hamster.
Oh, Ebichu?
Yeah, Ebichu.
Yeah, yeah. We know of Ebichu.
Okay, just wanted to make sure, and any of my listeners out there who don't know what Ebichu is, seek it out there. You can find it pretty easily on the internet. It's hilarious. Just don't accidentally download the Spanish subtitles like I did, because then you're just going to have to re-download it, because that was a pain in the ass. Oh, man. But anyway, just I realized that at Anime Boston this past year, everybody was going nuts. Everybody's making fun of it and all that. I realized it did get a bit out of control, but there were people who immediately went on there saying that, you know, they couldn't hear the hentai, or they couldn't, you know, sit down and watch the hentai without somebody making a comment. And I'm thinking to myself, if you want to, like, play with yourself in your own room, that's perfectly fine, but why else would you be watching a hentai other than making fun of it in a room with all these other people in it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was KatsuCon. When I wandered in, I was actually a little drunk and bored and wandering around alone, and I wandered into a showing room just to see what was going on, and it was really quiet in there. I heard talking, and I thought, ooh, it's really quiet. Maybe this is something good. And it was just like five creepy, creepy dudes watching this horrible hentai, completely silent.
I have to tell my friend's KatsuCon story right now, because it will completely frighten you to every realm of the earth. My friend of mine, who shall remain nameless as lightning goes outside, so hopefully that won't start up anytime soon, but a friend of mine went to the fan dub parodies at KatsuCon a couple years back, and she was with a couple friends, and they go to sit down, and right away she hears this shriek from one of the other friends that she was with, and they realize that a hentai screening was in there before the fan dub parodies, and somebody left a mess.
And
that chair was immediately then put outside, and a biohazard sign was put on it. I don't know where the hell they got the biohazard sign, but that was the most, that was by far the worst experience I think anybody's ever had at an anime convention, and I pray to God it never happens to anybody that I know.
Yeah, good God, that beats the hell out of every bad story I've got.
Yeah, we don't really have anything like that to tell. The worst I have is some guy wouldn't leave us alone and kept talking about hentai.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's the worst I got. That doesn't even come close.
There was
at
one
all.
Panel that I was at where somebody, this one fanboy, kept asking this one who was running the panel why she used an alternate name, because he didn't understand why she needed to use this alternate name, blah, 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 blah. And finally, she stops, she turns to him and says, "That's the name of my best friend who died when I was young." The entire crowd goes silent, and the guy's like, "Oh." Oh, man. I love shutting up fanboys. That's certainly a nice way to do it, but I doubt that experience is ever going to happen to this guy ever again.
Yeah, see, the thing about lines like that is that they're always true. I wish I could come up with a line like that that wasn't true, just to use it as, you know, a tool.
Because
it would be so useful to be like, you know, "That was, you know, my mom's name something." She had cancer.
That was my cousin. He had a brain hemorrhage.
Yeah, something like that.
Watching anime.
Yeah, oh, wow. A brain hemorrhage while watching anime. He must have been watching the end of Evangelion.
Could be.
Oh, man. Anyway, let's go on to general improvements you'd like to see at anime conventions, moving away from just Anime Next in general, like things that you haven't seen at conventions or things you might have seen at one convention that you'd like to see at more of them.
Actually, I had a really good experience at Animazement where they have a system that they put in place for how to line people up for large events like the cosplay. And I don't want to go into all the details of the system because it's kind of complex, but it's a way to prevent people from needing to line up to see events. And it worked insanely well. And I'm going to bother the people who run Otakon to no end to see if there's any way either they will implement it or they will let me implement it at Otakon.
So was it a ticket system or?
Kind of. It's basically they open a booth somewhere. They don't even say where the booth is going to be until they announce it. And they give out stickers that you put on your badge and their number.
Oh.
And then, and like a half hour before the thing's going to start, you go outside to where they had all these numbered posts, and you stand by your post. And they just let each post in one by one. And you can stand in your post number or in any number higher than your number. So your friends all get stickers. You go to the highest number you've got. You can all sit together.
That is really cool.
And that way, you can just funnel people in, sit them down, and you can force people to fill in all the seats, but yet you're not breaking up groups of friends.
Well, I hope New York Comic Con does that next year if they have Kevin Smith back, because that would be very, very nice.
Yeah, I mean, I can't give enough props to Animazement for doing that, and I really am going to push for that at every con I have anything to do with.
Yeah, the thing is, for something like Kevin Smith, I don't know how well it would work, because a Comic Con is where there's less big groups of friends. You know, at Anime Con, there's more big groups of friends who all want to sit together. So you'll get more people going for the higher numbers to sit with their friends, whereas at a Comic Con, people will sit at their number and not move.
Okay.
I mean, once again, it's hard to give anything more than very specific, like, Katsucon needs extra staff people in this sector at these times, or they need a different kind of staff person to run this kind of event.
Yeah, the general advice is that, you know, some cons have gotten it down over the years, but, you know, when you make a schedule, you stick by your schedule. You know, you have everything run smoothly. You make sure everything works. You make sure your lines move well. You make sure that things start on time and end on time. Yeah. You know, all that basic stuff. Do what you say you're going to do and make everything run smoothly.
Well,
you know, and once you've got that down, then everything else just kind of comes naturally.
And here's a suggestion for every single convention, because I now know firsthand what this is like. If you're going to change the time of a panel, try to let the panelists know ahead of time.
Yeah, that actually happened at Katsucon last year, where I went to what I thought was going to be an Utena panel, and it was something else, and no one knew what was going on.
Yep.
And that's like the American Animation panel this year. It's still set up on the website that it was happening at 7 on Friday, and we get there, and in every single schedule it says 3 p.m., and the person that I was running it with didn't get there until about 5. So I had to tell them we need this change back there immediately. So obviously, you know, we crossed it out. We were able to make a change. But because of that, you know, half the people probably went there at, you know, 3 or 4 looking for it and didn't find it because it was too little too late. But again, that'll happen at any convention. No, I'm not blaming them for this at all. But just if there's any way, shape, or form that you could possibly get, you know, like, I don't know, like the panelists' cell phone numbers or something like that, so that if you can call them if there's any changes, that would probably be nice.
Though at least, honestly, all of the conventions that I've gone to regularly, it's never been an issue, at least for my events, in that they always stick to the schedule, and I've never run into that problem, luckily. But then again, I go to a lot of very professionally run conventions, and until recently, I've skipped most of the smaller ones, so I haven't experienced that.
I think the first as time goes on, which I'll definitely give him.
Yeah, the first con we went to was Ohio Con 2.
It was probably the worst anime con ever run. I mean, they didn't even check badges. I wish I hadn't bought one because they didn't deserve my money. The DDR thing didn't work. Everything was just slipshod and shady, and none of the panelists were there.
Was there a random guy smoking a pipe on a piece of wood outside?
There
no,
were
but
prostitutes.
We played Settlers of Catan with a midget and a prostitute. I kid you not.
That beats every story I've ever told in my life.
We really couldn't make up anything funnier than that. A midget and a prostitute.
Oh my God.
It was
God.
Probably a midget prostitute also.
I'm not sure.
I couldn't tell if the midget was a prostitute or not, but there was a prostitute, a midget, and both of us, and we were teaching them to play Settlers of Catan in the lobby late at night.
And a guy walks into a bar and says, wow, oh man, that is beautiful.
No, there was one upshot to that con, and I wish more cons would do it. They had an old school duck hunt tournament.
Oh my God.
As far as the cable went back on a little TV.
Yeah,
and
we saw this scheduled in the con book, but we didn't really think we were going to do it. We figured, they're having a duck hunt tournament. That's cool. We're not actually going to do it, though. And then, lo and behold, Sunday comes around, we're getting ready to leave, we're in the video game room playing one last round of DDR, and this guy kind of snookers us into registering for the Duck Hunt tournament.
So whatever, we figure we'll just lose and then go home.
Oh, keep in mind, I gotta add one more thing before the story really gets going. There was a guy there cosplaying, and his cosplay was many, many, many Mario Duck Hunt cartridges all taped to each other into a suit of armor.
That is awesome.
He had single-handedly caused the price of that cartridge to go up like a dollar.
Well, no, not like a dollar, like 5 cents.
Some little bit.
They cost less than a dollar. But yeah, he had so many Mario Duck Hunt cartridges that he did cause the market price to go up.
I can imagine just how many cartridges he had to buy on eBay to get that done.
It was so heavy.
It was so heavy, he wore this thing over his head, and we figured that guy will probably just win, whatever.
He must have felt like that guy who dressed up as Ultimate Thing at a recent comic convention.
With all the rocks?
With all the rocks, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. So go on with the tournament.
It was actually, they rook us into it, and like five or six people go before us. And they're missing ducks left and right. And we're all thinking to ourselves, wow, maybe Duck Hunt's harder than I remember.
Yeah, I haven't played Duck Hunt in years at this point. And they had the cable extended as far back as it could go on a tiny television. You had to stand behind this piece of tape on the floor.
Now myself, Scott, and Katsu, who you met, were all there. And Scott goes up first of us, and he hits every duck.
Every single duck. I hit all of them.
And then I go up, and I hit every duck. And then Katsu goes up and hits every duck, and then everyone else misses.
Except for one kid who hit every duck. The guy with the armor of Mario Duck Hunt cartridges missed a whole bunch of ducks.
Wow.
It got to the point where myself, Scott, Katsu, and this other guy were the only people left, and it was in the hardest mode, and none of us ever missed a duck ever. And they didn't know how to end the tournament.
We just kept hitting. They switched to clay shooting. They switched to the guy running the tournament controlled the ducks. They switched to everything they could. We never missed anything.
Holy crap.
Ever.
So they turned it up into alright, it's going to be a regular Mario Brothers sudden death.
Not Super Mario Brothers, Mario Brothers with the POW and the fireballs and the pipes.
Now, they didn't really run it well, so they didn't tell us what the rules are. So me and Scott are fighting for first place. And we just start playing.
I thought we were fighting for second place, and Katsu and the other guy were fighting. It was a 2-2. It was a final four.
I won first place, you won second place, Katsu won third place.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I still have the... Remember, I won the NES.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, not to get sidetracked. Scott and I are fighting for first place, and the crowd's yelling and screaming, and we don't know what the victory conditions are. So I turn to the guy and say, so what, can I just kill him? And the guy said, no, you got to get the most points. And I said, so what happens if I kill him? And he said, if you kill him, he can't get any more points. And I immediately pushed Scott into a fireball and won.
Yes.
I never had the original Mario Brothers as a kid, but Rim had played it very much.
Yes.
So it was as soon as he switched to that game instead of Duck Hunt, I was pretty much
doomed.
The first
video game I ever had in my life was that double cartridge with Duck Hunt and Super Mario Brothers. So there you go.
Yep.
Wow, I had an Atari 2600 and an Intellivision 2.
Wow.
Yeah, I had an Atari 2600 with a whole bunch of games, but my first Nintendo games were that cartridge and then... The same day I got Mega Man 2.
My parents had this lovely, basically track record of getting me a system about 2 years before it was obsolete. So I got my Nintendo kind of early on, but then after that I got Genesis about 2 years before that was obsolete. I got an N64 decently early, but about like 2 years into its existence. And then finally I broke the chain by getting PS2 when it came out, because I had just basically gotten to this point where I'm like, okay, I'm behind every one of my friends. I need to stop this.
Yeah, we had always been behind, but then I got a Game Boy Color at release, a Game Boy Advance at release, and a DS at release. And a GameCube at release.
And of course, we're getting a Wii Evolution.
Okay, well, anyway, back to, what were we talking? Oh, yeah, comic conventions. Yeah, excuse me, anime conventions, or whatever conventions.
Yes.
Conventions.
I mean, the best advice any con can have is just, you gotta have good staff. And if you have good staff, the con will always work well.
Definitely.
Yeah, anyone can make a good plan for a convention. That's not really that hard. You know, it's all in, can your staff execute the plan the way it is written? The closer the execution is to the plan, the better.
Were you guys ever at BAFF, the convention?
Big Apple Anime Festival?
I was actually planning to go the year that it was canceled.
Okay.
Yep.
And see, that's the perfect example of not good planning, because they planned it for the weekend of the Republican convention, which was a beautiful idea. No.
Now, compare that to Otakon, which the Democratic convention actually wanted to have the Baltimore Convention Center while Otakon was on, and Otakon had the clout to say, no, go away.
That's awesome. That's balls right there. That's balls.
Yeah.
But again, they could do it because they'll probably have more people in a room than the Democratic convention anyway. So.
Yeah, actually, the city of Baltimore goes to great lengths to make sure Otakon stays around.
Yep.
They're even building another hotel and a mini convention center next to it to make so Otakon
That's
can
totally
grow.
Awesome.
Yeah, Otakon has outgrown the convention center there, and
every hotel in the city of Baltimore, like literally every single hotel, has been sold out for months.
That's why if I do go to Otakon, I'm definitely staying with a friend, because that makes more sense.
You can stay with us, maybe.
Right. Yeah, we run big, crazy rooms, and we could probably get you a place.
Cool.
As long as you don't bring too many people
with you. Well, chances are, like I said, I'll probably be going next year, not this year, because I'm going to Baltimore Comic Con this year, so that'll be my Baltimore convention.
Yeah. Walk around the entire building. When you're there, because I think Baltimore Convention Center only takes up one room in the convention center. Know when you're there that Otakon takes up that entire building.
Oh, wow.
every last room.
And it's not enough room. There's just, the hallways are all just a complete mess of crushing
The Baltimore Comic-Con is smaller than the Artist Alley of Otakon.
Holy shit.
Hell, honestly, Anime Next is great, but Anime Next as the whole is significantly smaller than, like, the video game room of Otakon.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the video game room of Otakon is the same size as the Baltimore Comic-Con.
I'd be curious to see how Anime Boston stacks up, because Anime Boston takes up the entire convention center, you know, the entire convention center that it's at, but it's a decent-sized convention center, but obviously not nearly as huge as a Baltimore convention center or something along those lines.
I've heard a lot of good things about Anime Boston. I just regretfully haven't been able to go.
Yeah, I could have gone, but it was the same weekend as Anime Next, right?
No, it wasn't, actually. It was about to...
It was the same weekend as Animazement.
Yes.
That was it.
That's why I couldn't go, because Animazement is always that weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm staff now, so I can't not go
Boston
to Animazement.
Boston had to move itself back by a month for this particular year. Next year, it's going to be back to its usual time in, I believe, May. But
Oh, great, then I can probably go.
Then we can probably
go. The reason why is because the only weekend that was free around the time that they usually have it was the weekend of the Boston Marathon. And they didn't want random runners to be staying in the same hotels as convention goers, because I'm sure that they'd probably run in the opposite direction when they saw some of the cosplayers. So,
well, the Orioles-Yankees game is the same weekend as Otakon.
The Orioles-Yankees game is the same weekend as Baltimore Comic Con, and that's why I'm going there on Friday for a 2-day convention. So there you go.
Though the best part is that because Otakon is planned so far in advance and people buy the hotels were pretty much all sold out for Otakon long before the sports fans had any idea they'd be going there.
Exactly, yeah.
So they all tried to get hotel rooms. They were all sold out, and they don't know why.
I have a room on the Light Line. I think it's about, I think it's like close to one of the last stops on the Light Line, actually, for Baltimore Comic Con, which shouldn't be too terrible. So
be wary. The Light Line is wonderful, but it is almost always under some weird construction every year. And there's always a way around it, like they'll have a shuttle bus or something, but make sure you know, because I've known a lot of people who got screwed by
that. I'll make sure to check that out before I actually go there, just to make sure, like, if there's going to be any sort of construction whatsoever, because I know that they build that up every year, you know, they add more stops to it, so I'm assuming that's what most of the convention's probably all about, I mean, the construction, that is, so...
Yep, but because of that, it's always under construction.
Well, you know what? Living in Brooklyn and knowing the MTA here in New York, I know all about train construction. It never stops.
Well, I mean, we live in Beacon. I actually work in the Bronx.
Oh, cool.
And actually, my girlfriend Emily lived in Manhattan. Now she's in Nagoya, but she lived right in, like, Union Square, and I'm used to all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, Union Square, I'm in on a regular basis, so... You know, right over by Forbidden Planet, and But anyway, let's talk about some cosplayers, because that's the one thing that we haven't really touched on. First of all, ask the question, have you and will you?
We have and we will.
Yep.
So what have you guys cosplayed in the past?
The first cosplay I think we did was actually that Anime Club Halloween thing where what game was it? Star Ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Anime Club, the staff, the board of directors every year would do, like, a unified group cosplay. But my thing was that I didn't have any money. So my goal was to make a costume for less than a dollar.
Okay.
Yeah, and I really just had no interest, so I went along with whatever they said.
My first recognized cosplay was unintentional. I dress up at cons usually, and I was at Anime Central, and I was just wearing a collared shirt and a tie, and it was hot, so I'd unbutton the top. And, you know, I have long hair. And FansView took a picture of me. They thought I was dressed up as Kaji from Ava.
Oh, God.
They're like, hey, Kaji, great. And I was like, yeah.
And first cosplay I ever did, and actually this is a story right here, because this is how I met my current girlfriend. I was part of a Fruits Basket masquerade group for Anime Boston, the first convention I ever went to, and they told me to dress up as Akito from Fruits Basket. And he sort of wears like this turtleneck type thing and all that, so... Yeah, I didn't bring a turtleneck, so I had to borrow a turtleneck from somebody else because I sort of, like, forgot I was doing it, and they had to remind me at the last second. By the time they remind me, I was at the convention already, so that was sort of difficult. But anyway, the point that I'm making here is that later on, this is a spoiler right here, so skip this for anybody who hasn't actually read the Fruits Basket manga and is planning on reading the Fruits Basket manga, but Akito turns out to be a girl later on. And you
not like the other way around that screwed me in so many anime.
So actually, I met my girlfriend. I was dressed as a girl, and she was dressed up as Shuldig from Vice Coast. So she was dressed up as a guy. So not many people get to say that they met their girlfriend dressed up as the opposite sex.
That's great.
So there you go with that.
Yeah.
Though our first, like, actual, like, real cosplay.
Well, I did at another anime Halloween, I dressed up as Ikitani from Initial D.
Yeah, whatever, you didn't do anything.
Yeah, I wore, hey, dressed as like a normal guy. I dressed up as a normal guy.
I dressed up as Satori for last year's anime Boston, and he basically just wears a lab coat, and I didn't do anything to my hair, so I ended up, in the end, dressing up as a guy in a lab coat, and I just really wanted to see who people would think I was.
I would have said you were Professor Tomoe.
I was gonna mention the professor.
Yeah, the professor. But our real cosplay, we actually did a real one last year at Otakon. We got all our friends together, the whole front row crew, and we dressed up as the Axe Gang from Kung Fu
Hustle.
Awesome. Yep. And it was really popular.
It was so popular, we had a hard time doing things at the con because people just kept stopping us to take a picture, so we only did it for a few hours.
Yeah, like we had to run away and take them off so we could actually enjoy the con.
Oh my god. Have you ever dressed up as somebody and then like ran into a group of people that, you know, were dressed up as the same, you know, people as you and just started walking around with them or something like that? Or?
No, I don't think we've ever done the kind of cosplay where there could be a group, but I've seen those kind of groups, you know, like at Otakon, this is one area with the escalators and the fountain and the little pool of water, and you down there is like the group cosplay photo, it's unofficial group cosplay photo area, and you'll see like just eventually like 100 Naruto cosplayers will coalesce, and people will just take pictures of all of them in a giant group, and then it'll fade away, and then a Full Metal Alchemist people will start gathering, and there'll be 100 of them, and it's anytime you look over you can just see the giant groups out
there. Like my girlfriend's convention was made for Anime Next when she cosplayed as Reno, and then she cosplayed as Elena from the Turks of Final Fantasy VII, and she's just walking around as Elena until finally she ran into a Sang, a Reno, and a Rude. And they just started, they basically just walked around together for the rest of the convention. So, you know, like, and actually the guys that we ended up walking around with were members of Fargate Productions. And since they gave me a plug at their website, I might as well give them a plug right here. It's FargateProductions.com. That's F-A-R-G-A-T-E Productions.com. And they make sort of like, you ever seen the stuff at Mega 64?
Oh, we are big fans.
They make similar type stuff there. And they're actually... They made a documentary about Anime Next, which is actually going to be on their website sometime soon. But they also made something about, like, I think they called it, like Cliff Jumper or something like that. And they're making their own sort of, like, real-life video game character. And it's very, very odd and awesome at the same time. So definitely check those guys out at FargateProductions.com. They're really, really cool guys. And they were dressed up as the Turks, and that made my girlfriend incredibly happy. So like as soon as she saw Sang, she just went up to him and started poking his dot. But anyway, you ever see a cosplayer who is too into his part?
Many times.
Yeah. We've had kids dressed up as Full Metal Alchemist characters who try to be in character and follow us around and bother us. God.
You know, it doesn't bother me if someone's doing that, you know, on their own or, you know, somewhere else. But if you try to drag me into it, I'm like, you get away from me right now. You can have your fun all you want. I don't, you know, I don't begrudge anyone if they like something and they have fun doing it.
Yeah, what was the thing I said?
Don't try.
Never begrudge a Naruto's headband.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes. Well, that's also like, there's some guys that don't know when to not be in character. And I'll make an example here. Like, I've been to a couple of panels where guys continue to try and be in character at the panel and in the process end up pissing everybody off by, like, not shutting up.
Wow. See, you need Scott, because, you know, he just said, he's actually said the words, you need to go away to people before.
Yeah. If there was a guy, if I was at a panel and some guy, you know, is dressed up as, I don't know, can you think of a good one?
God, I can think of so many. All right, they're dressed up as a Full Metal Alchemist guy.
All right, so they come up as like a Full Metal Alchemist guy in the military, and they march up to the microphone, and they like salute, and then speak in the military fashion, and you know, to ask their question at the panel. I would be like, you don't deserve a response. You need to go sit down.
Oh, wow.
You know, because the problem is that at an anime con, there's so many, depending, especially the big cons, there's so many people like that. They're just self-encouraging.
Yeah.
You know, one guy does it, and other people, you know, pay attention to it. And they encourage that behavior further. So you have to, if you don't like that behavior, or, you know, if that behavior is coming too close to you, you need to make sure that that person knows that it's not, you know, good to doing that.
Actually, at Katsucon, I was with the other Scott. I'll just call him Skojo from now on. But we were sitting in a McDonald's eating a McDonald's breakfast, which is the only McDonald's food I'll eat. And there were these two kids. They were dressed up as something from some anime I've never seen. And they were talking to each other in character for 45 minutes.
God.
It just didn't stop. And the whole McDonald's was silent, except for these two. And everyone there is listening to them, and is either an anime fan going, oh my god, or a normal dude going, what the hell?
Well, see, that's the bad part of the what the hell with cosplayers, because nothing is better than, at Anime Boston, there's a mall inside of the convention center, so...
There's that can't be good.
So obviously there'll be normal people, you know, eating their usual mall food, and then all of a sudden they'll see a guy in armor dressed up like somebody from FMA, or they'll see somebody dressed up as, you know, Kumagaru from Gravitation, and they'll wonder what the hell is going on.
Oh, we had a friend, Carla, who, she's really cute, and she was dressed, what was she dressed up as? Like, DigiCarrot or something?
Ravian Rose. With the dice and everything.
And it was a really, really cute costume, and she was walking down the street, and just the reactions of normal guys who were on the street.
Normal homeless guys.
Oh, God.
Didn't help that she walked over, like, a vent, and it pulled a Marilyn Monroe.
Well, I gotta say, though, some of the best moments of my Adult Swim panels were when Space Ghost was in the crowd for Anime Boston, and the Monarch was there for Anime Next. And, we just stopped the panel, and like, all of a sudden, yes, we have a celebrity in the audience, so ladies and gentlemen, Space Ghost, and, you know, he gets his applause, and blah, 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 blah. See, those...
Was it just a guy dressed as Space Ghost?
Yes, it was just a guy dressed as Space Ghost.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I think at J-Con in Florida, every year, they have the voice of Space Ghost as a guest.
Yeah, Anime World Order got him to say something for him.
Yeah, they got him to say, you're listening to Anime World Order, blah, 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 in Space Ghost's
totally
voice.
That's awesome. What was the best cosplay you've ever seen?
Oh.
Ever seen? Wow, there's a lot of them.
I can't say a specific one, but I can say a truth. Okay. Because when I used to go to Anime Central, I can't tell the whole story because it would take forever. But we ended up the presidential suite the first time we went, staying with, like, these minor voice actors. Like, they were voice actors in various things, but not, like, big-name voice actors. Voice actresses. I have to say that specifically. Voice actresses. They were also really big into cosplay, and they were really, really, really freaking good at it, and they were also really, really cute, all of them. And I really can't say more than that in an honorable fashion.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, I've seen so many cosplays, you know, from looking at fans' view and from going to cons that I can't even remember. There are just so many of them that are so, you know, the cosplays tend to either be, you know, excellent, you know, good try, but, you know, you didn't have the skill to make something perfect, or thrown together just, you know, cat ears and whatnot.
I mean, we've seen full stage makeup, like, probably as good a job as any professional in the industry could ever do. And they're just walking around a convention.
Yeah. The cosplays that are memorable, though, tend to be the ones that are clever. Like the Poke Pimp.
Yeah, the Poke Pimp.
Oh, man. Well, did you see the Kinko's Ninja that was walking around Anime Next?
No, we must have missed that.
There was a guy who dressed up as a Naruto-type character with a full Kinko's outfit on. That was hilarious.
Yeah, anything like that, I love.
Some of the best that I've seen, there was one guy at Boston about 2 years back who dressed up as a perfect Lynx from Chrono Cross.
That's cool.
Actually, we had someone who did the same thing at RIT
That's
Anime.
Cool. That's cool.
Did
Professor
we?
Boyle.
And there was a Bahamut dressed up at Boston this year that was
full
garb and all that and perfect. But then there's the guys that, you know, like, just are into their character so much. There's this Ed that goes to every convention that I go to, basically, that Ed from Bebop. And she's just totally embodies Ed. Like, she's got, like, the whole, you know, Ed character down perfectly, and she looks just like her. So even without the makeup, she'd probably still look a bit like her.
There was the guy at Otakon 1 or 2 years ago who embodied Hughes from Full Metal Alchemist perfectly.
Yes, he did.
Like, he had pictures of his little girl and everything, just throwing them at people.
That's really
cool. Of course, Sailor Bubba, probably the best cosplay I've ever seen.
And of course, Manfei.
No,
like
do not speak the evil words.
I like to move it. Oh, dear God. I want to wipe the memory of Manfei from my mind, but it just won't get scrubbed out.
See, Manfei needs to take a lesson from Sailor Bubba. Sailor Bubba is all cool, you know. I mean, some people don't like him, but they just don't understand what, you know, his story. But Manfei is totally just creepy.
Plus, he's pulling the whole angle of, it's my right, it's free speech, I'm a crusader for free speech, I'm a noble person. And, like, he really seems to believe that, and he pulls this shtick, and he yells and rails when they kick him out of a con.
Yeah, and the whole, you know, cosplay community, like, the serious cosplay community is all around him, you know, but everyone else is like, no. We don't want to see that. Go away.
I mean, there always will be at least one guy or girl that you know should not be trying to cosplay. that either just too much is hanging out or too little is hanging out.
Or they're just doing the wrong costume. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously we're talking about big fat people wearing very small costumes.
If you're big and fat, dress up as a big and fat character. And
well,
you're
not even that, but when I see a 14-year-old dressed up in a skimpy outfit to the point where you know that she should not be wearing that, you just really want to go up to her and, like drape a jacket over her or something along those lines?
I think it was an Anime Central many years ago. There was a girl, she couldn't have been more than 14. She was dressed as Rey from Evangelion. Oh, she was dressed specifically as Rey from Evangelion when she was naked in a towel.
Oh, God.
And she was just naked in a towel.
I've seen that costume like 3 times, the just a towel costume.
Oh, dear God.
It's catching on.
It was pretty disturbing. I was a lot younger then, so it wasn't as disturbing to me that as it would be now.
At least that
and like, if I was 14, that would probably be great.
Yeah, if you were 14, that's the best cosplay ever.
Yeah, but I'm 24, so that's no good.
Yeah, well, again, like I said, hopefully that means they just got out of the shower and they're not having fanboy funk. That's the best thing you could say about somebody wearing a towel like that. I don't know. Yeah, so I'm trying to think. Anything that I haven't asked you yet? Oh, yeah, obviously, the dealer's room. The dealer's room is an integral part of an anime convention to the point where that's how most people spend all of their goddamn money, and I would certainly be one of them. How often do you find something that you're just like, holy shit, at a dealer's room?
Well,
it's been years. I mean, when we first went to AnimeCon, it's like our first Otakon, and we walked into a dealer's room. There was like 9 football fields, and we just stood there in awe, and we didn't even know how to deal with it. And I spent all the money I had.
Yeah, we'd never seen merchandise like that before. This was stuff from Japan that we wanted, we didn't knew existed, and now we were exposed to it, and we had money in our wallets.
Now we've been to so many cons that I don't even think of the dealer's room. Like, I'll walk in, and I'll maybe see one thing like, oh, that's cool, I'll buy it for a friend, or, oh, that's a cool wall scroll to put on my wall.
I walk around the dealer's rooms at cons maybe once, when I get there or pretty early on, and then once towards the end, just, to see, is there anything here that I haven't seen before and I desperately need,
So we usually spend a lot more money in the artist alleys than we do in the actual dealer's rooms, except Anime Next, which for some reason had just an amazing dealer's room.
It really did.
Yeah, I totally didn't expect that the Anime Next dealer's room would be, one of the highlights of the con, but it totally surprised me.
Well, you got all of Master Keaton for like $40.
Yep, $5. The $5 DVD guy was great.
Oh, yeah.
We bought like everything.
Got there like right when they opened the dealer's room, and you could still smell the paint from him writing $5 DVDs when you walked
oh,
by
wow.
the booth, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that is class right there.
You can tell which series were crap, because he had a lot of later DVDs from Tenchi Universe, and he had he had Sailor Moon Super S, and there were just piles and piles of it. I don't think anyone bought it.
Yeah, but he did have some gems. I mean, he had Crying Freeman, which is okay, but he was missing the second DVD, so I only bought the first one instead of all three.
Mini Goddess, Hibane Renmei.
Nea Under 7. He has Geo Armor, which is actually called Kishin Core, which is awesome, and not known by many people. And you can get the whole OAV for $5 because it comes in one of those bricks.
Wow.
Plus, like, there was such a good selection of PVCs, like, beyond what I've seen even at Otakon in recent years.
Yeah, I'm not a crazy PVC collector, but, I like little plastic statue guys.
Yeah.
And if there's some really cool ones, they tend to be cheap. And for what you pay for them, they're a lot of fun, so I tend to look for them.
The past couple of anime conventions I've been to, I've been looking for an Ed from Bebop figure from the latest collection that just came out, the latest series of Story Image figures. And I got literally the last Ed from Bebop in the entire convention, like, while I was walking around on Sunday. And just happened to be, like, it was the one that was showing, like they had hanging as, like, the example figure. And I was just like, I want that. And they're like, okay. And they gave it to me, and that was my happiness.
I got the last pixelated Link cell phone dongle thing.
Nice.
I got the last, it wasn't actually Lacus Klein, but screw those fan people, it's Lacus Klein as far as I'm concerned. And they sold me, they said it was some other girl from Destiny who looks the same. So then they even tried to give me the actual Lacus Klein that I didn't want. So I told them I wanted that whatever character, and they were kind of miffed that I was just going to call it Lacus, and it was also the last one. But
well,
I
got a really good Togusa from Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex over at Anime Boston, actually. It's one of these Sega figures that is very, very, like, I have never seen this figure before, and
We'll have to watch for that.
I have a Togusa. Remember, I got it, but I think it's just a trading arts figure. I don't think it's a fancy Sega figure.
Yeah, because this. And
I'm looking out though, because I kind of want a Bato and a Tachikoma figure.
Yeah, I want a remote control Tachikoma.
That would be awesome.
If you don't have Second Gig, they're coming out with special editions of Second Gig right now that actually have inside Togusa, Bato. They're jacking up the price for them, but you know.
Yeah, I just don't know if I want to buy those DVDs or not.
Yeah,
because we're gonna Netflix that.
Yeah, we've gotten to the point where honestly, as deep into the industry we are, between Netflix, we don't buy anime anymore. We rent it all.
Yeah, and we don't watch as many shows as other people, and we tend to stay away from shows, you know, like the shonen fighting shows and the incredibly long shows.
Granted, we're watching whatever's on TV in Japan.
Yeah,
pretty much right up there.
I don't buy many shows, but I realize that the shows that I do buy would be shows that I could very well watch on TV, and yet they're on at inconvenient times. So,
we just don't have television.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like we haven't actually had any sort of television reception in almost a decade now. We just have no time.
Yeah, so if something is on Cartoon Network, like, you know, Samurai Champloo or something, that won't dissuade us from purchasing it.
Oh, sure, yeah, well, exactly. Like, I picked up, actually, at Next, I picked up the last volume of Champloo because I hadn't seen it yet, and it was...
Ooh.
Oh, it's real good, but I could talk about that for a whole show.
And that was really, really good. I love the ending of that, but don't want to spoil anything. Really good.
Like, now all we do is, basically, we'll buy anime if... It's something that we would watch again and again, which there aren't many shows, but they exist.
Gungrave. Most of them are movies.
I have old Gungrave because I knew I'd watch that again and again.
Yep, you've got all of Initial D.
Yep, I have all the Tokyo Pop Initial D DVDs, and only now do I find out Funimation bought it and is going to redo it. But yeah.
But that, and we'll buy shows that we would want to show to other people, like the kind of show that you haven't seen, Cowboy Bebop. Sit down. Here's some DVDs.
I need to get Genshiken so I can show all my friends.
We have the first DVD of Genshiken. And, of course, we'll buy anything that's cheap, and we'll buy almost any DVD number one if it's cheap.
Yep, because that's a great way to get people who aren't into anime into anime. You know, you give them a couple of disc ones and just say, here, check these out.
Yeah, so it's always, even if you don't collect the whole series, it's good to have, like, 10 or 20 volume ones of different shows.
Yeah, well, I picked up, like, Gals and Fancy Lala.
Yeah, Fancy Lala, the best magical girl show there is.
Ooh, ooh la la.
Well, no. Do you know about Fancy Lala?
I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
Okay, just real quick. It's a normal magical girl show about a girl who has a magic thing that lets her turn into an adult so she can be a supermodel, whatever. There's a subplot about dinosaurs, and it's really cool. The subplot about dinosaurs could be an awesome non-magical girl show. And you want to watch the show just to figure out the dinosaur subplot.
You know what? That might get me to watch it because I'm not much of a Magical Girl fan. So.
Yeah, I'm telling you, if you're going to watch any Magical Girl show, Fancy Lala is the only one you should watch.
Well, unless you really... If you're going to watch one, watch Sailor Moon because that's the ultimate. And then you'll never need to see anything.
A friend of mine cosplays as Tuxedo Mask every single time he's at an anime convention. And he will have so many random girls and sometimes even guys going up to him and screaming, Tuxedo Mask! Tuxedo Mask!
Mask.
Blonde bitch like you would not believe. Oh, boy.
Yeah, Sailor Moon fans are a unique breed. I've known many over the years.
You are one.
Yeah, but I'm kind of a fan. Like, I recognize that most of that show is utter crap.
Where are you going to make your Phantom edit?
Yeah, I've actually got a crazy idea to get all the DVDs together and cut the 4 hours that's actually really good out of Sailor Moon and make a movie.
Wow.
And just put it on
YouTube. You know what? If you do that, I'll watch it. Because I'm not going to sit down and watch all of Sailor Moon.
It wouldn't fit on YouTube, but we could definitely BitTorrent it around.
It's just a matter of time. I mean, we do a podcast an hour every night, every weeknight.
You guys are stronger
We still have
than
to do tonight's
show. You guys
show.
Are stronger than I, let's put it that way. I mean, I get stretched thin enough with my two podcasts that I do, but you guys do it 4 times a week.
Yeah, well, you're still in school,
well,
though.
That much is true.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, only for a couple
Plus,
only,
I mean, we
only
both
for
have,
a while, so.
We both have a one-hour commute each way to our various jobs. And we do all these conventions. We're out of town every weekend. And, like, today, we're doing this with you. Then, as soon as this stops, we're going to hit stop. Then we're going to record our show. Yesterday, we recorded our show. And we recorded feedback for 2 other podcasts. And we recorded 4 promos.
Oh, wow.
Like, we have all the professional equipment, and this is like a second job at this
point. That's amazing. And here I am sitting here with my, you know, 2 USB microphones, no mixer, and hot recorder, thinking to myself, yeah, I'll get there someday. Well, I mean, I do want to do radio as a business, but if you actually knew how small my room was, you would understand why I don't have a mixer.
I can imagine if it's a college dorm
it's
or
a dorm,
some
it's a
Brooklyn
it's
apartment.
A place I've lived in all 22 years of my life. I live in a cubbyhole. That's the best way to put it. The rest of the apartment's nice and huge. I live in a closet.
Awesome.
Yeah, like our living room in our house is bigger than probably our entire apartment was just about back when we were in college.
Not the entire apartment.
It's close.
It's bigger than the living room. We had a pretty good apartment in college.
Yeah, we had the best apartment you could get, but that's another story.
Cool. Yeah. And my friends love saying, Ian, come out of the closet, because that's just a lovely
Had to come out of the closet.
Come out of the closet.
I have a walk-in closet, too, so it's
well,
not
that's probably the size of my room, so there you go.
Oh, okay, cool.
A walk-in closet is probably the best way to put that. And I'm running out of space for my comics, too, so I got to find a place for that. But anyway, now, you talked about the artist alley. Now, what's the usual temperature you find inside of an artist alley? I mean, do you find non-anime guys in there often, or is it mostly just guys that are, you know, doing their fan art?
It's mostly girls.
Yeah,
guys.
Artist Alley is...
Yeah, but I just...
Artist Alley is full of mostly girls, and you tend to find different things in there depending on the size of the con and the type of the con. You know, at a Comic-Con, it's pretty mostly indie artists trying to hawk their wares. But at an anime con, like Otakon is mostly girls selling buttons, girls selling stickers, maybe a guy somewhere in there.
And there's usually a lot of really good, like, original art based on characters, which I just call it fan art, but it's good enough to where it's almost like it needs its own term.
Yeah, and then what you'll find is, like, a few independent comic people, maybe two or three, and then a bunch of web comic people scattered around, and then specific craft people, like there'll be a Super Dolphy person, or a t-shirt person, or a custom Naruto headband person, but yeah, most of it is girls selling cute things that they drew.
It's awesome, too, when, like, I see some random people that, you know, I've seen around conventions, and I realize, oh, they finally got their con table. They've been wanting that for years, you know, and I realize that, well, hey, hopefully they're actually making some money and not losing it from being there, so.
We have a lot of friends who have made a lot of money running their tables at conventions. I mean, it's scary, but we actually, many, many of our friends are extremely talented artists.
Yeah. What was it? Carlos sat at the, had an Otakon table, at the Otakon we were just talking about.
Yep.
Carlos dressed as Ravi and Rose. She made Gatekeeper's bookmarks, and she made a lot of money off of Gatekeeper's bookmarks.
Well, you know, actually, I have some friends that I know through my girlfriend that actually were trying to get a table at Anime Boston, and were told through their college that they would be able to get a table. They get there, they spend all this money. They were going to do, and I still can't believe they actually did this, they were going to do personalized panties for anybody who wanted, you know, any sort of character on their underwear. They would be able to get it, and they also made a whole bunch of drawings that they were going to be selling and all that. And they're told at the last second, you don't have your table. So they spent all this money on, they've got all these extra pairs of women's panties sitting in their room with absolutely nothing to do with it now because they couldn't get their deal with their table.
I would have saved it and hit up another con because that could scarily make a lot of money.
I know it could.
Yep.
Yeah.
They got to watch out because all the big cons are bit by bit really cracking down on anyone who does the Artist Alley as an industry or as a mass-produced kind of thing as opposed to original
art. If you're an Otakon, especially, if you go into the Artist Alley doing something that should be in the dealer's room, they will shove you in the dealer's room.
Yeah.
And if you're selling something that is the equivalent of bootleg merchandise, like if you're manufacturing, like, Pikachu plushies, they will kick your ass out.
Well, they did have, like, they were mostly there for their art, but they, you know, were doing this as, like, a side thing, and, like, I had a feeling that they were probably going to do, like, more, like, if you want this, you know, give us your email, and then we'll do it afterwards, which is different than, you know, just going in there with a whole bunch of their stuff and, you know, doing it that way. Because they are mostly artists. But again, that is a problem to have, because if you're a multi-purpose person that has the art and has the dealers, you're stuck in the middle between the two rooms.
Though actually, I've seen a trend more and more of studios, especially small studios, or individual artists or webcomic artists, will, even though they're an artist and they're doing original art, they'll just buy a table in the dealer's room instead of being in the Artist Alley.
Yeah, for example, at Otakon, what's the guy's name who does Mega Tokyo? Fred?
Yeah.
But Gallagher, no?
Yeah, Fred Gallagher.
Right, yeah. He always gets a big thing in the dealer's room. But what's the guy who does the Apple Geeks guys or the PPP? Not PPP.
It doesn't matter. Someone.
Yeah, the guys who are from Sweden, they do the Artist Alley. You know, and they're both webcomic artists. They're both basically doing the same thing. But one guy chose to go to the dealer's room and one guy chose to do Artist Alley. Because it doesn't really matter for that. You know, nothing is banned from the dealer's room. You can go in the dealer's room.
Other than actual bootlegs.
Yeah, other than actual bootlegs, nothing is banned from the dealer's room. It's only Artist Alley that is regulated because it's so much cheaper to go into Artist Alley.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's weird, like, because we went to cons for so long from the perspective of poor college students, and now that we're adults out in the real world and we have money, like, we could have just bought a table in the dealer's room at Otakon and done a Geek Nights thing if we wanted.
Well, only one square's worth.
Yeah, but even then, that wouldn't have been that much money.
No, not that much.
We could have just paid for it.
Yep.
Having money makes it so much easier to do podcasts and to do anything.
Well, that's why I can't wait to get my ass out of college and just get myself a freaking job ready and just get it over.
No, you don't want to get out of college because I'd trade all the money to be back at college with my college life.
You know what? It's gotten to the point where mostly the only thing that I do left at the college, because again, I'm taking my last class right now. So once I'm out of that, on July 10th, I'm officially out of college and then I'm going to file for graduation and I'm done.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks way to very go. Much.
Though, see, we didn't really go to class.
Yeah.
Ever. Honestly, running the anime club was a full-time job, and I just didn't go to class because I didn't have time for it. The club was more important.
Not saying out there, kids, that you shouldn't go to class, but...
No, you should skip class because college, for the most part, in my mind...
If you get all C's in college versus getting all A's, the only difference that all A's will do for you is you'll get the same piece of paper at the end. You only need to get all A's if you plan to work for some big corporation or something like that.
As your first job. Like, I worked for IBM, and they had a policy if they won't hire anyone out of college with a GPA less than 3.4.
Oh, wow.
So I kept my GPA at 3.4. It was like 3.9, and then I just stopped going to class, and it steadily dropped. But I didn't care. And then after your first job, no employer is ever going to find out, care, or even think about asking what your GPA was.
Well, that's something that I'll certainly remember right now. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, plus, honestly,
you wish you would have known
yes,
sooner.
Yes, exactly. Like, God damn it, I could have been slacking off more. But wait, no, I slacked off plenty in the first place. But.
Okay.
What?
I mean, I guess we got more out of being in the anime world than we did from going to class, and now we do this podcast, we do all these con things that we probably wouldn't have had the opportunities if we'd been very studious and had actually done all the college work as opposed to all of our fun life stuff.
Yeah, another thing is that even though now I have plenty of money and I have, you know, anything, there's really not much I want for short of, you know, Ferraris and mansions and things.
Manservants.
Manservants, right.
Manservant hecubus.
You know, we got cars, we got houses, we got computers, we got DVDs, we go to cons. But in college, even though I'd never had enough money to do everything I wanted or have everything I wanted, there were always, like, 30 geeky people there at any moment. If I needed geeks, there they were. Now, it's very hard to get people together, and that's why cons are even more valuable. Because, you know, it's some place I can go, but there's going to be thousands of geeks, finally.
Cons.
You know, after all this, you know, time of being, what is it, starved?
Yeah, deprived.
Cons
deprived.
Of the internet, yeah. That's what they're for. Oh,
yep.
Man.
I mean, honestly, if the internet didn't exist and if anime cons weren't what they were, I would probably honestly have gone into academia and been a professor just so I could stay in a college town or a college
campus. I would have gone for my master's and then my doctorate and then been a professor just to stay where all the nerds were so I'd have someone to play games with.
So it's funny, anime cons and the internet are the only reasons we didn't do that.
Oh, man. Yep. Well, that's literally like half the reason why that I'm hoping to at least get a job with you know, a geek-type company sort of right off the bat and hope that, you know, maybe from there get some geek connections and work my way up. But, you know.
If you do computers, I could probably hook you up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
All right. Well, I'll certainly keep that in mind.
Yeah, anything IT related, I could probably swing you at fairly nice positions somewhere.
Yeah, and get that bonus, referral bonus.
Yeah, my company has offered me a pile of money if I get them good
Holy
people.
Holy crap.
Like a scary pile of money.
Well, you know, honestly, considering that I'm more on the side of radio and all that, and like hopefully be a voice actor on the side someday, that's sort of what I'm aiming for now. But
and see, there you go. Anime World Order is talking about how people don't want to be voice actors anymore. Well,
yeah, have you ever listened to Anime World Order or anything?
Have not, but have heard of it. So,
in the very least, you should totally send them some voice feedback and talk about how you want to be a voice actor.
Yeah, listen to their two most recent episodes and probably their next episode because we sent them an audio feedback. Just the beginning parts where they talk about cons and how there's no zeal anymore and, you know, how they don't like all this stuff that we like at cons.
You're the counterexample because you actually want to do this thing.
Yeah, they're like,
that doesn't exist.
They're like, you know, people don't have an aspiration to be voice actors anymore. People that, well, yeah, they do.
Well, the whole reason why that I got into radio in the first place is because I realized that, well, number one, I think I have the voice for it, and number two, I would like to actually do what I want to do, and that is, you know, be a voice actor, you know, be able to voice these characters in a genre that I've, you know, loved for years, and, you know, sort of be able to get myself out there a bit, you know? And that's something that a lot of people I know want to be. So, you know, maybe in their circle that might not be, but there's still plenty of people out there that want to be a voice actor someday, so.
Well, honestly, I can tell you right now, and I hope this doesn't sound weird, but if you've got a good radio voice, and if you were mic'd properly, it would be very good.
Oh, I know that. Because with the technology I have over at the radio station, I know what I could be, and let's put it this way, once I get, you know, actual money, you know, once I get a steady job, I'll be getting myself some better equipment, so that much I know. Yeah. And also this is my Skype recording mic also. So I've got the better USB mic that I do for regular episode of Geek Speak that sounds a hell of a lot better than this and can actually get decent recordings down. But for some reason it doesn't.
Yeah, we're actually running our Skype through the mixer and the compressor and everything.
Yeah. And that's another reason why, like, for some reason that mic doesn't want to work with Skype, and I've tried, so I'm actually gonna have to send it back to them.
Oh, wow.
So.
Yeah, well, it's USB mics and Skype.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah, we don't use USB. We have all the analog stuff.
But one other thing that I wanted to ask you guys about, the Masquerade. Now, the Masquerade at every single convention is bound to be a bit different, but most of them are pretty similar. And one phenomenon that I've been happy to see as of late is that a lot of them have been making people pre-record their skits so that you'll actually be able to hear them. And I know that, for example, it's a requirement now at Anime Next. You have to pre-record in order for people to actually hear you, because the past couple of years, it was impossible to hear anything whatsoever. From you guys going to masquerades, I mean, do you enjoy the Masquerade, or is it something that's, like, not really for you?
I've been to them. I've had good times with them. I generally avoid them like the plague, more for the fact that I can have a lot more fun outside of it than dealing with all of the issues of getting into it, watching it, being stuck there, watching the 1,000 horrible skits to see the 2 funny ones.
Yeah, it tends to be exactly what Rim said, that at most masquerades, the vast majority of the skits, at least that I've seen, I think I've been to like 3 or 4 masquerades, are just painful and terrible. And, you know, not the costumes. Some of the times the costumes are usually terrific, if they, you know. But the actual skit part, you know, most of them are just painful to watch and boring, even if they pre-record and you can hear it. And I just don't want to have to sit through that, you know. There's going to be, guaranteed, 2 or 3 amazing skits that will entertain me greatly. But it's just not worth the time where I could be doing other things out in the now sparsely populated con that make it worth it to sit through to watch those 3 things.
I mean, I want the Masquerade to always be around because a lot of people enjoy it. It's a great thing, and I think it's a great thing to have at cons. It's part of our culture. But I would like to see conventions also do things like what Animazement did, and I know other cons have been doing, where they have a bunch of staffers or a group of professionals, or at least people who know what they're doing, put together and practice for an actual, real, long, like, thing, like a musical. Animazement had a musical, and it was just amazing. And I know other cons do similar things, and I like that, kind of like how there's anime music videos, and then there's the AMVs that won the contest.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a masquerade that is just the people who would have won the contest.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it's really annoying that at Otakon, something I did the past 2 years is we have a tradition of watching the horribly violent movie on Saturday night, right, which is right after the masquerade, and it would often be in the same room as the masquerade simulcast. So I kind of, you know, since I don't like going to the masquerade so much, we would go to the simulcast on purpose because it was just so airy. And
you'd make fun of people and yell and scream and play our DSs.
Yeah, because, you know, if you're just in this room with a giant, you know, projector showing what's going on in the masquerade, you can do whatever you want. You don't have to pay attention to the crap skits, and then you still get the 3 or 4 good ones.
But now Otakon is so awesome, they ended up taking that away from us.
Yep. But what I would enjoy is what cons could do to make me personally very happy is record the masquerade and take the music videos and take the winners, and then at closing ceremonies, show the videos of the winners. If you do that, I will go to every closing ceremony.
The way most conventions get me to go to the masquerade is because I want to see the winners of the AMVs. So I'll sit around and I'll wait until everything's over just to see the winners of the AMVs, and then I'm getting my ass out of there. I don't even care who won at that point because I've already seen everything, so there's no reason for me to actually see who actually won, you know?
Yeah, plus, I gotta say, I mean, there was a drought, I'd say, starting from last year and about 4 years prior, maybe 3 years prior, where there were just, as in my opinion, almost no good AMVs coming out. And I just thought they were all crap. And recently, I've seen this upsurge of good AMVs and AMVs to shows that aren't the typical show, and it's really been drawing me back into the whole AMV culture. It really started with last Otakon, where the winners of last year's Otakon were all absolutely amazing. Yeah.
And also, it's the funny AMVs that usually get me into it, because...
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Or the clever ones.
Exactly.
Like,
I mean, I love serious ones. I really love an AMV that makes me feel something, but it's just so hard to do that well, and there's no middle ground. If you try to make a serious AMV, it's either amazing and you almost cry, or it's just stupid.
And sometimes it could be a really short AMV too, but they just get the right song and, you know, the right clips, and they get your heartstrings going like just like that. But then there'll be the stinkers where you're sitting there waiting for it to be over, and that's one of the reasons why I'm not like recently I haven't gone to the AMV screenings, because I'd rather just go on to animemusicvideos.org, you know, after I find out who won and just download the winners.
And actually, something interesting happened at Otakon last year where they had all the winners, and they were all good, but there was one AMV that was amazing, in my opinion.
But it didn't even win. It was an honorable mention.
Like, no one voted for it from the audience, and the Otakon staff gave it an award anyway as, like, the staff's pick or something like that.
That happened at Boston a couple years back also.
Yeah, this video, it was, 25-25.
Something like that.
NTXT5 in the year 25-25.
Yes.
If Mankind is still alive, it's just an amazing video.
Well, I'll probably go on to animemusicvideo.org right after this and try and look for it, so there you go.
Yes, in the very least, I will post a link to it in our forums, just because I'm going to make everyone who listens to Geek Nights watch this video as well, because I've forgotten about it until just now.
Well, you know what? I'm glad that I could remind you. Well, there you go. And I think that pretty much wraps it up right here. So any final thoughts from you guys, or...?
No, it was great to be on your show. I know we made fun of you a little for your Wii panel, but, I mean, we're fans.
Yeah,
we like
you.
I
know
cool
that.
Guy.
And you know what? Honestly, like I said, I did that Wii panel for the sake of doing it. And
if you hear the feedback we gave to Anime World Order...
Yeah, I think the grudge was less with you and more with the people, you know, who didn't seem to realize that you were not, you know, somewhat... It's like they were asking you questions if you were a Nintendo guy.
I know. And you know what? That's why we make perfectly clear before we start our panels. Like, we're not associated.
But people just don't seem to get it, you know? And it's
it was to your credit that you were able to BS your way right past all of that.
Exactly.
The other thing that bothers me is when people, like, do they not have the same internet that I do? It's like they don't know things that are just posted everywhere, or they believe misconceptions that have been debunked everywhere. It's like, are you not attached to the world somehow?
Yeah, like, you know, one of these days I really just, like, suddenly want to just come out with this, you know, big revelation, this big shock, and just see how many people actually buy into it. Like, something like the Simpsons has been canceled because people stop watching it, you know? Or something along those lines, and not along the lines.
Firefly is coming back, and the Cowboy Bebop people are going to animate
exactly. There's going to be a Trigun Cowboy Bebop crossover, and in it, Spike actually comes back to life. You know, that just see how many people actually buy into that. But anyway, I can certainly understand where you're coming from that, and I love your guys' podcast, so I'm glad that I could have you guys on.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, and we'll do it anytime you're
awesome.
Up for it.
Hey.
As long as we're not busy.
Hey.
Yeah.
I know. Sounds good to me.
There's some other people trying to get us on their podcast, and we just never have the time.
Yeah, we've had a lot of podcasts try to get us on, and we've never even done a promo until just now.
Yeah, how many episodes do we have?
138, I believe.
And we just made our first promo yesterday. And it's not up yet.
I haven't even edited it.
I gotta make a couple promos for Comic Timing and for Geek Speak, because my last promo is no longer relevant because I'm no longer associated with Brooklyn College Radio anymore. So that promo is hasn't been right for the past 2 months. So I'm just gonna stop entirely putting it.
The closer to our show still lists that voicemail number that doesn't work anymore.
Luckily, no one ever calls
it.
Or maybe they do, and it's not working, so we don't know.
Oh man, fantastic. fantastic, man. Well, anyway, I'll leave you guys to do your own show now, and I'll wrap things up here. The email address for GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at speakgeekspeak.com/forums. And don't forget to vote for GeekSpeak over at Podcast Alley. The link will be in the show notes and on the main GeekSpeak page. And iTunes reviews would be very nice as well. For Rim, for Scott, I mean, Levesine, don't forget to check out Geek Nights over at frontrowcrew.com. And have a great week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody, and I'll see you next week. Yeah, we're back to weeklies now here on Geek Speak. The opening and closing theme for GeekSpeak is brought to you by Deluxe, Jeffrey Tosser, Pixie Trix, Shonen Samurai, and Zircon. You can find their work and a whole lot more over at ocremix.org. Once again, a thank to Rim and Scott of the Geek Nights podcast for joining me, and you can find their podcast over at frontrowcrew.com. And a once again reminder that as of this episode, GeekSpeak is back to its weekly format. So I'll see you all next week for episode 41.